From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Mountain View.
San Rafael.
Lower Haight, San Francisco.
Brentwood.
Corte Madera.
Pleasant Hill.
Inner Richmond in San Francisco.
Montclair in Oakland.
Coming up, we are experiencing the worst drought in recorded history.
It's as bad this year as it's been in 150 years in California.
Maybe much, much more. So what are we doing about it?
When I shave my legs, I turn off the water.
I stopped flushing my toilet after every use, which is a little gross.
We'll talk with advisors, utilities, and you to see how we can best handle the state's water shortage.
So our wastewater is all of the water from our toilets, our urinals, our kitchen sinks, our bathroom sinks, and our showers.
The yucky water.
The wastewater.
Reusing your toilet water and other tips for beating the drought today on Cross Currents. Record low rainfall and lack of snow have made this the driest year in California's recorded history. Some scientists say it's the driest in half a millennium. It's enough to cause Governor Jerry Brown to declare a state of emergency.
We are in an unprecedented, very serious situation. I'm calling for a collaborative effort to restrain our water use.
The governor has asked all Californians to start using 20% less water. And we've decided to spend 100% of today's Cross Currents talking about how we're going to deal with it. To help tell the stories, I'm joined by our executive editor, Ben Trefney. Hey, Ben.
Hi, Hannah. Thanks for sharing the mic with me. So a little bit later in the show, we're going to look at how our local utilities are reducing their water usage, and we'll talk about where all the water in California goes.
So we can maybe identify some of the things that can change.
But first, we wanted to look at that call out by the governor for us to all reduce our usage. We're not to the stage of rationing yet. That last happened in San Francisco more than two decades ago, in 1992.
Right. For now, it's voluntary. So we wanted to see what you are doing to use less water. Here's some of what you had to say.
We watch our children and we don't let them use the water. As adults, we have the responsibility to show our children that we don't use too much water.
Bastante agua.
No more water in the lawn, just no more washing the car, stuff like that, you know.
I don't shower every day, except when I'm working really hard, then I'm too dirty and I have to shower every day. I've started, instead of running my sink, I'll actually fill up a gallon so I can keep track of how much water I'm using. I've done things like that. I've stopped washing my car. I think there's a lot of things people could do.
The place where I work has instituted a, if it's yellow, leave it mellow rule, and to save water. And at home, I take shorter showers and turn the water off when I'm washing dishes.
Those were the voices of Norma Salvalsa, Jim Cassandras, David Howell, and Rachel Mercer. So, Ben, you and I were both longtime Bay Area residents, and we have our own ways of being conscientious about the water we use.
Yeah, I'm always looking for new ideas, and the other day I saw something that inspired me. I was at a friend's house, and she was doing some dishes. She saved pretty much all the water she was using in a bucket so she could use it later to water her plants. So that's become a habit for me, too. When I'm doing dishes here at KALW, I try to save the dishwater and use it to water plants around the station.
Okay. Well, in our house, we've ditched the baths for showers. According to the Environmental Protection Agency, it takes about 70 gallons of water to fill a bathtub, and it's way less for a five-minute shower, only 10 to 25 gallons. So it's get in, get clean, get out.
That's a good one. Now, I know lots of pretty thoughtful people who are trying to do their part, but I was talking with some of our colleagues, and we were wondering what kind of difference does it really make? So we did some research to figure out what groups use the most water in California.
We'll start with consumers, your average Californians, you and me. According to the latest census estimate, there are more than 38 million of us.
We cook, we clean, we drink.
And some of those things use more water than others.
Absolutely. We actually found an interesting chart that shows how it breaks down. It was published by the Pacific Institute, which is an independent think tank that works to solve problems like global warming and water shortages. And they found five things, Hannah, that use by far the most water at home. Want to guess?
Okay, let me try. The clothes washing machine.
Exactly. Yeah, that's one of the top five. Clothes washers use about 20% of the water in the home.
That's a lot.
There's four others.
All right. The dishwasher.
You know, actually, based upon the Pacific Institute studies, the dishwashers in California homes only use less than 2% of the water that residents use overall. So it's not really a big user.
Okay, how about taking a bath?
Now, that's one that your family, Hannah, you said that you guys had kind of cut out because it uses so much water. And I think a lot of Californians have had that idea, too, because only 2% of the water used in the home goes into baths. Now, if everybody took baths, that would be a much higher percentage. But apparently, Californians are onto that one.
Okay, this one's got to be on there. Using the restroom, flushing the toilet.
Absolutely. That's actually the highest user in the home. So if you could get a low-flow toilet or something like that, you're going to end up really dramatically dropping the amount of water you use at home.
So what else was on there?
Well, showers are actually the second highest user of water, and that's about 20%. In fact, five of these, as I said, are all about the same. Toilets, showers, faucets, and clothes washers are four of them. And then there's one other one that I never would have thought of, Hannah, and that is leaks.
Leaks? So if we can find and fix those, we could use a lot less water.
Right. So in the big picture, if you combine all those residential uses that we have every day with how we use water in our workplaces.
Like our buildings, the outsides where we landscape, pools, schools.
Right. All that. It all comes together to use up almost 22% of the state's water.
Not a lot.
No, not really. The thirstiest group in California by far, well, that's the state's farmers and the crops they grow. Nearly 75% of California's water is used for agriculture.
The vast majority goes to the Central Valley. There's a good reason, too. It's the largest expanse of Class 1 soil in the entire world. That means it's the biggest and best ground for growing crops.
So that makes sense. But since using 3/4 of our water is such a huge proportion, I wanted to know where it goes. So I asked Pacific Institute Director Peter Glick.
A lot of the water use in agriculture in California goes to relatively low-valued, high-water-using crops like alfalfa, irrigated pasture, cotton, rice, some of the field crops. Those do use the majority of the water that agriculture uses, and they don't produce the majority of the revenue. Most of the revenue for farmers comes from more valuable fruit trees, nut trees, vegetable crops. But farmers grow what the market suggests they grow. That, you know, they grow the kind of crop that their soils will support, or where they see a market price for something, or that matches the equipment they have in their barn. There has been a change in recent years in the kinds of crops Californians have been growing, away from these high water using, low valued crops. But there is still a value to growing alfalfa for a farmer. If that farmer can sell it to a dairy or to somebody who wants it, and if they can make a profit in it.
That's Peter Glick, president of the Pacific Institute. So I told him that in today's show, Hannah, we were considering ways to use less water.
On an individual basis.
Exactly. But how about farmers and choosing the crops that they grow? What if they grew more crops that used less water? Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, that's a great point. We've talked about how much water we use at our homes for cleaning and cooking and dishwashers and sanitation and drinking, that kind of thing, in our gardens. But we also use water in the goods and services that we buy and consume. And a lot of the water that we really consume as individuals is consumed in the food that we eat. And it's the water required to grow the things that we eat. And on a per calorie basis, it's also certainly true that the largest consumer of water is meat production. We grow a lot of grain, and then we feed that grain to animals. So in that sense, individual actions to cut meat consumption will reduce our individual water footprints. And that's another strategy that we can think about.
Again, that's Pacific Institute Director Peter Glick. We'll actually be hearing more of my conversation with him later in today's show.
So, Ben, he's basically saying, go veg.
Well, I don't know if he's going quite that far. But when the water levels are low, eating less meat can help the state through the crisis.
All right. So we've heard that agriculture uses almost 75% of the state's water. And you said earlier, Ben, that consumers, like you and me, we use more than 20%. So that doesn't leave much water for other things.
No, it really doesn't. 2% of our water goes to aquaculture.
That's using fresh water for raising things like fish, shellfish, and plants.
Right. And a very, very small amount of water, less than 1%, is used for livestock, for mining, and for hydropower. That is very, very small in the big picture.
Okay. So we know where California's water goes. Now, what's the state doing to use less?
Well, California requires a certain amount of water be kept in rivers and over in the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta. That's for fish and for other wildlife, as well as plants. But this year, instead of releasing fresh water downstream from three reservoirs, the state's keeping that water in place. That could really negatively affect the fish populations, which require that fresh water to help them breed and spawn.
Okay. And what's being done to cut into the bigger percentages we talked about, like the water used for homes and farms?
Something really significant, actually. There's something called the State Water Project. It's one of the legacies of former Governor Pat Brown.
That's our current governor's dad. Pat Brown was governor in the 1960s.
That's right. So the State Water Project is a massive system of dams and canals that moves water across the state from northern reservoirs to Southern California through that delta. And that water is used for people living in cities and for people who are working the land. But after these last 3 years of drought, Hana, officials have decided to stop delivering water for the first time ever.
So how will that affect the farmers?
They're going to have to plant less. There just won't be enough water to irrigate all the fields.
And so how about people in the cities?
They're going to have to get their water locally. It's not so easy for a lot of communities. And it actually looks like 17 towns around the state may be out of drinking water by the end of March. Those include Cloverdale and Healdsburg in the Bay Area here, up in Sonoma County.
Now, the state won't just let them dry up.
No, they wouldn't. And if it rains a lot, and soon, then the State Water Project could open its taps again. That will be considered on a month-by-month basis. But right now, it's closed.
You're listening to a special water edition of Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba here with Ben Trefney. We just heard about how the state uses water, which gives us some food for thought on how and why we might cut back. Now let's hear about some more of the things that you're already doing to help deal with the drought.
My name's Tyler Whitmire.
My name's Alicia Tam, and I'm from South San Francisco.
My name's James Morrison.
Hi, my name is Arbor Day.
One of the things I'm doing for the drought is I stopped flushing my toilet after every use, which is a little gross, but I think productive. But also I think it's pretty clear that the drought is because we're trying to grow crops all over California in basically a desert. So I'm not convinced that anything I do or other people do individually is going to make a huge difference.
When I shave my legs, I turn off the water. And when I brush my teeth, I just use a cup as opposed to just letting the water run.
I've been taking shorter showers in order to try and conserve water. It just seems like something everybody needs to do, considering there's going to be the water supply is going to be limited pretty soon. And, you know, it just seems like the right thing to do.
I was a little bit stressed about it, so I decided to focus on abundance, send prayers to the ocean and the sky.
However you choose to deal with the drought, we want to hear about it. Call our tip line, 415-264-7106. Share your water-saving thoughts with us at 415-264-7106, and we may get your voice on the air. Now let's return to one of the nation's leading thinkers on issues of water use and conservation, Peter Glick, the president of the Oakland-based Pacific Institute.
Yes, we heard from him earlier, talking about the kinds of crops California farmers grow these days. We'll hear more of my conversation with him now. I asked him what kinds of radical changes the state might need to make if drought conditions become the new normal.
Well, so that's a great question. Obviously, we hope the drought ends next month or next year, that we get another wet year and can start to refill our reservoirs again. But we also know that the climate's changing. We know that humans are causing climate change. We know that that climate change is going to get worse and worse as greenhouse gas emissions continue to be emitted. We know that some of the most significant impacts will be on water resources. Rising temperatures means less snow in the mountains and more rain, a shift in temperatures, a shift in rainfall patterns, probably an increase in extreme events like both flooding and drought. And if this is the new normal, I think we're going to have some fundamental conversations about water policy.
Well, let's have that conversation now for a moment. What are some of the suggestions you would make for the state to change its policies of using water?
Well, so the good news is there are some smart things that we can do. We don't manage our groundwater very well. We get a lot of rain and we get a lot of snow. It runs off in the mountains and into our rivers. Some of it goes into soil moisture and into groundwater. We've pretended as though surface water and groundwater were not connected. And we have limitations on how we can use our surface water, but pretty much anybody who wants can pump groundwater. And we greatly overdraft our groundwater. That is, we use groundwater more rapidly than nature recharges it. And so groundwater levels in many parts of the state, especially the Central Valley, are falling. That's unsustainable. We have to manage surface water and groundwater together. We have to monitor and measure groundwater use. We have to figure out how to allocate it from one user to another and in order to protect that groundwater resource for future generations. So that's one thing we can do. Another thing we can do is we can greatly improve the efficiency of water use. The truth is we're not very efficient in our current water use. A lot of the water used is wasted. It goes to inefficient fixtures and toilets and washing machines in our homes. It goes to inefficient outdoor landscaping. It's not used as efficiently in agriculture as it could be. We could grow a lot more food with less water if we changed irrigation practices or the kinds of things we grow. Those are difficult conversations to have, but if this drought continues, they're going to be the key to doing better with the limited amount of water we have. That's just two examples.
A lot of what you're talking about would mean big economic decisions that would really tax the state in some ways. Do you think that politically the state would ever be willing to do those kinds of things?
These are difficult political conversations to have. It's one of the reasons we haven't really had them yet. The good news, again, though, is that, for example, a lot of these improvements in efficiency are not only cost-effective, that is, they pay for themselves in a relatively short period of time.
Once you make the initial, down payment.
Yeah, that's right. Once you make the initial down payment, like anything, they pay back over a period of time and a relatively short period of time for some of these things. But in addition, these efficiency improvements let us continue to do the things we want to do. There's a big difference between letting your lawn go brown and not washing your car and taking a shorter shower. That's not really what I'm talking about. Those are things we do during droughts to get us through emergencies. But what I'm really talking about is washing your clothes with a washing machine that uses less water but does the same or a better job, or flushing your toilet with a high-efficiency toilet that uses 1.3 gallons per flush rather than the old 6 gallons per flush, or growing more food with the same amount of water by using drip irrigation or precision sprinklers. That's what I mean by efficiency, and there's enormous potential still untapped in California to improve the efficiency of water use.
That's Peter Glick. He's the director of the Pacific Institute in Oakland. So probably nobody in the state thinks more about ways in which we can be more efficient with water. I'm wondering on a personal level, in a time of emergency, is there anything else that you are doing yourself in order to improve your efficiency or that you've done in the past that maybe other people haven't thought of?
Well, sure. There are lots of things that all of us as individuals can do. At home, I've replaced my toilets with very high efficiency toilets, and I have a high efficiency washing machine. I have a low flow shower head and low flow faucets. And I've removed all of the grass from my garden. I have a beautiful garden. It's native vegetation. It's really a lovely garden, but it doesn't have a lot of grass. And that's enormously cut my water use. At the moment, our estimate is that my wife and I use on a per capita basis, per person, about half of what the state average is. And I know for a fact that we could even do better. We could be more careful about making sure that when we run the dishwasher or the washing machine, it's a full load rather than a half a load. I know that I could take somewhat shorter showers during droughts. And we haven't implemented a gray water system. That is a system to collect some of the water that we use in our home to use in our garden, to reuse in our garden. And that gray water systems are being encouraged in California, and that's another option for homeowners.
If there were one thing that you would ask the governor to implement right now in order to improve the state's efficiencies with water, what's that one thing that you would want to see that would make the most impact?
Well, I do think that the governor and the state as a whole could do much more to encourage improvements in efficiency. And maybe this doesn't require state action, but it requires local water utility actions. But, for example, rebates to help people buy some of these efficient appliances or implement efficient irrigation technologies on farms would do an enormous amount toward moving us toward more efficient use. That's one strategy. But another example might be, it turns out that we spend a lot of money and a lot of effort collecting wastewater, water we've used for something, and we treat it to a very high standard in our wastewater treatment plants, and then we throw it away. That resource is actually an asset. It's not a liability. And the state could do more to encourage increased use of wastewater for landscaping or for industrial uses or for groundwater recharge or for ecosystem restoration. And that's something that might require some investment on the part of local agencies or on the part of the state, but could also do a great deal toward reducing our demand for new water.
That's Peter Glick, president of the Oakland-based Pacific Institute, talking to Ben Trefney in this special water edition of Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba, and Ben is right here with me.
And Hanat, Peter was talking there about how he's trying to use less water. I mean, a lot of us have.
Right. Here in San Francisco, we're using 12% less water than we did during the last drought. In fact, we use the least amount of water per person per day of any city in California. Not too shabby.
Not at all. Now, to learn more about San Francisco's water usage, Hanat, you headed over to the Public Utilities Commission.
That's right. And that stuff Peter Glick was talking about with the black water, well, I got to see it in full effect. The PUC is right near City Hall on Polk Street, and along the outer perimeter of the building, there are these rectangular planters with beautiful green plants growing in them. You may have walked by them, and you'd never think that garden is irrigated with reused wastewater.
Waste? Like bathroom wastewater.
Precisely.
You mean toilet water?
Yep. Toilet water, urinal water, bathroom sink water. Water you flush down the bathroom pipes comes down and waters these plants. And that's just the beginning of a life cycle of toilet water. At the PUC, I met Paula Kehoe, the director of water resources, and she walked me through how it works.
So what just happened?
So that...
It is okay to laugh. This is funny.
So that was the toilet flushing, which we're very proud of because we're using recycled water and we've been able to save over 1.5 million gallons of potable drinking water, and we use recycled water instead to flush our toilets. So here on the sidewalk, we are treating wastewater. These plants, as you can tell, love the water. They're very healthy. They are a variety of water plants. We have calla lilies here. We have other plants from the fern family. A variety of plants that love water and love nutrient-rich water.
They look happy.
They do.
Look happy.
We can walk along here. We're actually following the path of the treatment of the water right now as we walk down the sidewalk. It takes about 48 hours from once the water leaves the toilets and the urinals and the other fixtures to go through the living machine and back up into our toilets. Now we're walking actually into the building. We're in the lobby of the building where we have a cafe. And to my right is the last wetland cell within the living machine. As you can see, there's a number of plants inside the building. So we're creating green plants in our interior lobby. And if, as you turn around, you can see a number of people enjoying our cafe adjacent to our on-site water treatment system. So we started on Golden Gate Avenue, and we walked to Polk, and we took a right and walked down Polk Street. And then we took came into the building, and now we're in the foyer of the building. So there's three separate wetland cell areas. And we are at the end of the wetland treatment. Now we're heading into the basement of the building. Noisy! The water comes down here for its last stage of treatment, which is disinfection. And we do that through ultraviolet light and chlorine. And then that water, is after it runs through the UV and chlorine, it goes into the pipe back up into the toilets and urinals throughout the building.
Back up the stairs from the basement to the final destination of the water, the bathroom.
Here we are.
Let's get another flush. Don't tell anyone. That's enough. We don't want to waste any more, right?
That's right. We don't want to waste any water.
That's Paula Kehoe, Director of Water Resources at the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, where Hannah here got a really close look at the reuse of wastewater in their building.
Yeah, the water we use in the bathroom doesn't have to die after we flush it away. It lives on through this life cycle where it feeds plants and comes back to us for reuse.
Ah, yeah. But, Hannah, we have come to the end of the life cycle for today's Cross Currents.
And just like that black water, we will be back to start it all over again tomorrow. Minus the flushing. That does it for today's edition of Cross Currents. The team includes David Boyer, Jeremy Dalmas, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Daphne Matsiaraki, Liz Pfeffer, Seth Samuel, and Stephen Short. And special thanks to Resu Sussman, Christina Loring, and Mary Willis. Today's show was produced by Julia Scott with help from Nina Gensler-Debs and engineered by Chris Hoff. Our senior producer is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor.
Holly Kernan is our news director, and thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney.
And I'm Hannah Baba.